please step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air performance number 666. I am Lisa Sheps, and I am joined by my scary co-host, Ms. Nicole Shiro.
Hello!
And co-host, Ann Ciccolella.
So glad to be here live and in person.
You are listening to us on KOOP, HD1, HD3, Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. Don't go away. Step right
up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
You're dancing, dancing. It is Wednesday, April 27th, 2022. On the show today, we have our very dear friends from Austin Shakespeare and their show by William Shakespeare, Midsummer Night's Dream, and later on we're going to be talking to the Jigglewatts and their performance for World Burlesque Day. And of course, we're going to have news and views of the world of theater in Austin, Texas, Bastrop, Texas, Lockhart, Texas, Paris, France, and Athens, Greece. Stick with us.
Look how you putting on airs. Well, I don't know who you think you're reaching. Let's face it, nobody cares. You think you're really walking with Jesus, bro. Sashaying down a carpet of prayer.
Okay, we're dancing with the devil.
Well, don't we do that all the time?
Dancing with the devil. This is show 666.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
How many years does that mean?
We're 13 years, Ann Ciccolella.
Oh, another 13. Lucky number.
Yep.
Yeah, I know,
yep.
Right?
13 years, 666.
We're just getting them all.
It's the sign of the devil. Well, we are back. We're live and in person. We have a big group here. I'm going to say who's here with us. You just heard the voice of co-host Ann Ciccolella, who we also introduced. It's so good to have you back here in the studio.
I can't believe it.
It's so exciting.
Pretty amazing. It's like, it's like fitting into an old glove. And joining us, I believe for the first time, we have Max Green. Hi, Max.
Howdy.
And Eliza Renner.
Hello.
Hello. Excellent. Well, you know, it's first of all, I have to say, International Folk Bazaar. Kim Simpson.
Kim's always doing a great job.
Crazy, crazy.
Kim likes to do that.
He does, and I love when he pronounces words. It's just fun. Because, you know, I don't do that. I don't pronounce words.
Well, Kim makes it sound like it's so easy all the time and never has a problem, and I wouldn't be able to switch my brain that quickly.
I know. So we've got a lot to talk about, and we're not going to really be able to get to talk about everything. We've had every day this week, there's been a Broadway opening. So
I was
going
to say, lots of openings. Which ones are you going to cover?
Well, hold on a second there, Nicole Shiro.
I'm going to just keep talking.
Okay, keep talking. yeah, so there's five of them. But before we do that, we did have a loss in the theater world today, or this week, which was Bobby Morris.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Morris, for those who aren't familiar with him. And I did have the privilege of working with him on a production of Sugar years ago.
I thought of you. I was like, didn't Lisa work with him also?
I did. He was very nice. It was a production of Sugar, which as we've talked about on the show, or if people know, is the original musical version of Some Like It Hot.
Now, was he in the original production?
He was.
Mm-hmm. That means I saw it.
Yeah.
Oh, well then
he was. It was
him
and Rudy Vallee, and they also
I just
both
don't remember anything but not liking it.
Yeah.
Oh. I was like, this is theater? This is terrible.
Well, there you go. So I did a production of Sugar with Bobby Morris and Larry Kurt playing the two roles.
Oh, Larry.
Larry Kurt. He was a really great. He was a very sweet man. I knew him kind of well. Oh, what's his name? Oh, my God, I just lost his name because I'm getting old. I'll come up with it, who played the Rudy Vallee role. But Bobby Morris was a very comic, fun guy.
Yes.
Think Gene Wilder, that kind of energy. And he was known for doing those kind of funny roles. But he really also played Truman Capote. on Broadway.
Truman Capote on Broadway. We should say most people might know him from How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
Oh yes, it totally.
When you're trying to be like, who is this Bobby Morse? People.
Oh right, we didn't say that. Yes, most people know him from in How to Succeed in Business, both the original Broadway play and the movie, and that's the Rudy Valley. Rudy Valley was not in Sugar. Rudy Valley was in How to Succeed in Business.
He was in a TV show recently.
He was in Mad Men.
Thank you. I was like, something in the last few years recently. Yes.
Yeah.
So How to Succeed in Business won the Pulitzer for drama.
For drama?
Well, I believe probably in that at that time that was the only theatrical review.
Is it because it was drama?
It was drama, but they won 7 Tony Awards as well.
I did know that, but I didn't realize about the Pulitzer.
Yeah, but so Bobby Morse, you can go to, for everything we're talking about here, you can get further information. Oh, first of all, do you guys know who Bobby Morse was?
Can't say that I
Eliza
do.
Renner and Max Green.
No,
yeah.
No.
I'm guessing so there you are the younger version of the people here in our show. But I would guess you would recognize him. He had a huge gap in his teeth. I don't know. Like Lauren Hutton, who I'm guessing you also don't know who she is.
No.
I can pretend like I do.
Well, let's just jump into...
I've had this whole week has been the week where I've discovered how old I really am, because in my head I'm 18. Apparently I'm really not.
No, you're not. No, you're not. So we're going to go in order of the opening, starting with, I believe, Wednesday night. There was four color girls who considered suicide when the rainbow is enough, and it was a major hit. Actually, most of the ones we had today, I'm looking for my, there it is, for color girls. The Did They Like It site gave it 11 thumbs up.
I was about to say they gave it more thumbs up.
And 3 mixed and 0 bad reviews. Mm-hmm. And of course, this
may
is...
I say Dane Parker had to read that for his theater class this week.
Oh,
last
wow.
week. But I was like, wow, that's great. But
yeah.
That is crazy. So this is, and I know I'm going to mispronounce her name, Natsaki Shange's 1976. It was it's like poetry and spoken word.
Yeah.
But this one is, they said, Camille Brown, who directed it, took it to a different level. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of, typically there's not a lot of joy in this. They really talk about the struggles of being a black woman in the United States. This took all that. They didn't change a word of it. But it still seems to have a lot more joy, a lot more color.
Isn't that great? Like,
yeah.
I think almost everybody in the original cast went to opening night too. They had some really great photos of all the women coming back and now. And I was like, and then they did it. It was an interview I read somewhere I'll have to share so we can talk and post next week. But it was talking to them about they didn't realize the important work that they were doing then, even though they did, but they didn't really. And to see it now, it was just a really, really great piece.
So do we know what year
piece.
It was?
1976.
76?
Yeah. 76, 74. 76, which was the year I graduated high school. So there.
And it was radical and it did well.
It was. Lauren Collin Hughes wrote the review for the New York Times. Hmm. She said, quote, Brown's staging is so attuned to the words and cadences of Shange's choreo poem, yet so confident in its own interpretive vision that the characters blossom into their full vibrancy. If you never thought of For Color Girls as a funny show, be prepared for Brown's 7 splendid performers to persuade you otherwise.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah, so pretty cool. Pretty well across the board. Once again, offstageonair.com, there's a link. You could also go to didthaylikeit.com and see these are it's an aggregate and it's got all the different things. So that was one on the plus side. Ding!
Ding, 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 ding!
The next one that opened up, I believe, on Thursday was Hangman, which is a straight play. That took your breath away.
A straight play,
yes. Amazingly enough. And it is, they talk about, this is about the abolishment of the death penalty in England and the second most famous executioner. What's he going to do now?
And it's Marty McDonough, right?
It is. Martin McDonagh.
And what's he going to do now? I like that explanation, Lisa.
Exactly. And it is, Jesse Green describes it as Martin McDonagh's rip-roaringly hilarious, yet profoundly horrific play about the abolition of corporal punishment. This is a production of the Royal Court Theater and the Atlantic Theater Company, and I hope I underlined the name. Yeah, it is. The first most famous best executioner is a guy named, the character's name is Albert Bloody Pierpoint.
Does that make you giggle?
It does. Albert Pierpoint. I didn't say how many thumbs up this one got. This one got 8 thumbs up, 5 right in the middle, and 2... not so good. And let's see what some of the other critics said. We're just going to blast through these. Did they like it? Bedatri Cordry said, with its tired jokes and dated humor, Hangmen provides an easy laugh, but it's difficult to watch for those of us trying to be better audiences. Questioning and interrogating works of culture that don't quite sit right with our conversations around contemporary politics. Deep Tran from Broadway News says, as it is, Hangman thoroughly wrings its premise dry, but anyone trying to find deeper meaning in McDonagh's play will be left hanging. They talk about the guy that plays the executioner, David Threfalls. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Is supposed to be an amazing performance. And the raps, Robert Hoffner says, Threfalls' steely performance creates a black hole that leaves little oxygen for any other actor on stage.
Interesting.
Dun, dun, dun. All right. That's it for Hangman. We're just going to blast through these.
Yeah, it's like, keep going because there's some other good ones.
And the long-awaited for Funny Girl opened. You just say that.
Yeah, I was about to say you say that, but I don't think everybody else is.
5 thumbs up, okay. 8 and 6 thumbs down.
Yeah.
Beanie Feldstein, who we all love and cherish, for most every critic, really kind of missed the mark. But it was interesting in Jesse Green's article, they talk about the fact that the music was written for Barbara Streisand. Mm-hmm. And there's not another performer like her that can hit those.
Who just had a birthday this week?
Oh.
Bon
anniversaire, that you say.
She and Iggy Pop share a birthday. That made me happy.
But I have to tell a little story. There's a podcast I listen to about theater, and they talked all about the reviews. And this person was giving Jesse Green a hard time for spelling Barbara Streisand's name as Barbara Streisemann. And he said that they haven't taken down, hadn't corrected it. But it was done on, if you actually read the review, it was done on purpose. Because he says Barbara Streisand, and then he says, quote, or so Jerome Robbins, who supervised the original productions, misspelled the name of an exciting young singer, then about 20 years old, on a list of possible fannies he drew up around in 1962. Mm-hmm. Other ones that they were looking at were Judy Holliday, Edie Gourmet, Tammy Grimes. Edie
Gourmet. So this is like 40 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 50. 50 yeah. years ago.
Again, the reminder that we're all old. It's hit me a lot this week, and I'm not the, yeah.
But unfortunately, Beanie Feldstein did not get a good review. But what I also found interesting is that he talked about the, and this isn't really a talking about this production, but talks about how fictionalized it is. And I did not know this, that Fanny Bryce, who in the movie and in the play comes out as very innocent and coming from a poverty, was actually, she came from a wealthy family.
Oh, yeah, she did.
And she was... she had been married previous before,
yes,
so she wasn't as innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And that Arnstein was not sort of duped by other people. He was a crook. And he was a crook, but stayed with her, or she stayed with him anyway, which makes the character in Jesse Green's opinion, and sort of mine too, a much more interesting character.
Yeah. Yes. Well, today it would be different.
Yeah.
You get all that. So
I was about to say, but I don't think you wanted to lay all that dirty laundry on the table back then as much.
So, but in the review, he says, Arnstein did not get involved in illegal activities because he hated being supported by Fanny. He was a crook and a jailbird who had been gladly sponging off of her from the very beginning. Mm-hmm.
Nikki Arnstein.
I did discover, I never knew that Beanie's brother was Jonah Hill. That was new to me this week.
Yeah.
And Beanie's brother is fun to say.
Yeah, Beanie's brother is fun to say. And
but I think her story is lovely, that she, as a child at 3 years old for Halloween, got dressed up as Fanny Bryce. Yeah. I mean, those stories are just
He has
great.
Been gushing and posting like nonstop from the pictures of them as a kid to her thing, her posters in Times Square, how proud he is of her. And that's why I was like, I didn't even know your brother and sister. Makes sense, but just totally didn't know. Very proud brother. So that I would be scared out of my pants to even try to step into that role and do it. So kudos to her.
Well, there's a reason why it hasn't been revived in 50 years. It's never been revived. So let me go. Matt Weinman of New York, AM New York, said, without an extraordinary lead performance, Funny Girl doesn't work, which is unfortunately the case here. Ugh. On the other side, Naveen Kumar of Broadway News said, with Feldstein firmly steering the ship, Funny Girl is a breezy and joyful ride. Mm. Christian Lewis of Did They Like It said, I cannot recall a time when I laughed so much at a musical. Mm. And after all, while we crave a powerful belt and a beautiful vocal interpretation, isn't one of the main goals of the show to make us laugh? By that metric, Feldstein knocks it out of the park. So,
Lisa Mayes, you said you listened to a radio, a theater podcast. What Three on the Aisle, you know, is mine is dead.
And is gone, yes.
And so is Terry Teachout.
So is Terry G. Chung. It is called Today on Broadway.
Okay.
It's part of the Broadway, I forgot the name of their overall thing. Okay. So it's a daily with Matt Tamanini, who was a guest on our show.
So I knew she'd do the comedy. I watched, they released footage of the Sitz probe. And when I saw it, I was like, ooh.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah, I'm just saying. And I just still couldn't get over my, ooh.
Okay, we got to keep going. The next one to open was The Skin of Our Teeth by Thornton Wilder.
Mm-hmm. One more tight squeeze like that, and where would you be? Yeah,
exactly. this was a Pulitzer Prize-winning play in 1942. It follows the Antrobus family as they confront the challenges of nothing less than the apocalypse. It is a three-hour, three-act play. The first act lasting almost 2 hours. Mm. And the Antrobus family, which is normally, I'm using air quotes, typically cast as a white family. This time it's a black family. Mm-hmm. Reviews were all pretty good. 7 thumbs up, 3 in the middle, 3 down. I've never seen it. Have you seen it, Anne?
I've worked on it, but I've never...
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Where did you do it?
In NYU. Yeah.
NYU?
Yeah.
My college also did a production of it, but I was not in it. I did see it.
It's interesting.
You did was see that it? The same season as The Ketchup Bottle?
No, Ketchup Bottle was high school.
Oh,
okay. There's no doing inside jokes on the radio. Anyway, the maid, who is played by an actor named Gabby Beans, evidently runs away with this show.
Yeah. I mean, she's the a fabulous is, role. That
yeah,
was a line
I was about
role.
To say.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, is this Lincoln Center? Who's doing it?
It is. It's the new house at Lincoln Center. Oh, no, sorry, the Beaumont at Lincoln Center.
Oh, it's
Center.
The Beaumont.
It's at the Beaumont.
Wow.
Yeah, big time.
And it's directed by Liliana Blaine Cruz, who evidently does some amazing work.
2 hour first act. That's
a long
almost 2 hours. I have to read this one part. And I think this was a Jesse Green... No, it was an Alexis Selesky. When she went out for, let me see if I can find it. I can't find it. But when she went out to the restroom, one of the people there that worked in the lobby asked her if she was leaving, because evidently many people leave after the first act. And I think, I would guess it's more, based on these reviews, more about the length of time versus
the quality. We're not used to that.
Yeah.
Right. So in other productions, as you may well know, there's this unknown event that has gone on, and it's typically unknown. This production is almost specifically the Civil War, which makes the Antrobus family being black all the more interesting.
You all right there?
I am. I just knocked
you
my...
You were musical directing and how
I'm
to...
I'm so excited.
How to fight with the little musical
right.
stand.
We have 2 minutes and another show to go. And then there's other stuff that I really want to talk about, but we can't.
We do history.
The long-awaited Strange Loop opened last
Ooh,
night.
Yes.
And, Strange like, it had... I'm bringing it up here so I can give you 16 thumbs up.
I was like, there was a lot.
One in the middle and zero thumbs down. Yes. So just face it. Suffice it to say, we've talked about it on the show here. It's a meta show about a queer, large black man trying to write a musical about a queer, large black man.
Correct.
Very meta. And he's got six voices in his head that come out and talk to him. It was really hailed wonderfully when it opened off Broadway in 2019, I think
you are correct on that.
It's by Michael R. Jackson, and this is the Pulitzer Prize week because it won the Pulitzer Prize.
I was like, oh, you get a Pulitzer, and you get a Pulitzer.
And this is a production of Page 73, Playwrights, Horizons, and Woolly Mammoth all together. And just, I mean, amazing thing. Who wrote this? This was written by Maya Phillips. She says, quote, "A Strange Loop pulls off an amazing feat, condensing a complex idea full of paradoxes and abstractions into the form of a Broadway musical." Just amazing.
Yeah, and it sounds cool.
It's going to run forever.
That would be
kind
of awesome.
And I just want to read her last paragraph. And she says, and yet, starting her last paragraph, the and yet is starts the paragraph. I don't know if that's my English background. So anyway, she says, and yet, it seems as if there's no measure of praise that could be too much. After all, this is a show that allows a black gay man to be vulnerable on stage without dismissing or fetishizing his trauma, desires, and creative ambitions. Now that's some radical theater. So mazel tov.
Yeah, that is. I like that.
All right. I just need to, because I know that Nicole will like it. There is a an album of an all-female superstar that is coming out tomorrow.
Yeah, but it's not just an all-female album. I mean, it's people like the likes of Cynthia Erivo.
Cynthia Erivo is playing, oh my God, hold on. She's playing, I've got the cast list here. Oh, that's the wrong one. That I got Superstars and Superstition. So it comes out on the 29th. And Shoshana Bean is playing Judas. Mm-hmm. Morgan James is playing Jesus. Cynthia Erivo is playing Mary Magdalene.
Yes.
Orfei is Pilate. Is that how you pronounce it?
Pilate. Pontius Pilate. Pilate.
I'm Jewish. I don't know these people. Mm-hmm. And the only other thing, that there's some wonderful stuff here. We didn't say it, but the Tony announcement has been postponed from... to next week, and the cutoff date has gone from
extended.
The 28th, which is tomorrow,
yes,
to the 4th of May. So
the
I mean, that's
extended a week.
I don't understand why. Because how? What do they change?
I guess
some
they
of the
figured
openings?
Something was hop like to be eligible was yeah. you know give them a week. I
All
don't
right.
know.
There's a lot more stuff I wanted to talk about. For instance, tonight, both POTUS and Mr. Saturday Night open. So those are going to... POTUS just seems amazing to me. That's all I want to say about POTUS.
I know. You've been excited.
I know, because it's a great everything. But we're going to take a little break, and we're going to listen to the song Tyler Perry Writes... Take two. We'll edit this part out. Tyler Perry Writes Real Live from A Strange Loop. We will be right back.
Thank you for the opportunity.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air on the famous Co-op Radio on our 666 Devil Show.
In our 13th year.
One of the things that I was going to talk about, but we didn't, was like some of the superstitions in theater. And certainly Macbeth is having its share of problems.
I was like, they're having their problems as it's playing right now. Isn't that fun? It's
exactly.
It's not funny, but it's... interesting.
Of course, I should have said the Scottish play.
Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun. But we're not here to talk about the Scottish play. We're here to talk about the Midsummer Night's Dream play.
Yes.
That Austin Shakespeare is doing back in the park for the first time in a couple of years.
Back in the park, there Shakespeare in the Park.
Didn't know you had a theme song, did you?
I just made it up.
So here with us is not only our co-host, but the artistic director of Austin Shakespeare and the director of Midsummer Night's Dream, the incomparable Anne Ciccolella.
So Hi, glad Anne. To be here. Thank
yes.
you.
Yes.
And then we have Eliza Renner, who plays Hermia.
Hello.
And Max Green, who plays Demetrius.
Thanks for having us.
I have to say one thing right now. Demetrius is a fun word to say.
I would say Demetrius is
a fun character to play.
Name. Yes.
Wouldn't know. Never done it.
No.
Anne, Midsummer Night's Dream, what's it about? Never heard of it.
Well, it's mainly about lovers, but most people associate it with the fairies.
Yes.
And with a character that turns into, has the head of a donkey.
A donkey, yes.
Which we have a female doing that. Gwen Kelso
Bottom.
Is Bottom.
Yep.
And it's one of those shows that, you know, if they do Shakespeare in middle school, it's a Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah, true.
So we're hoping that a lot of kids are going to come, you know, to the park and see it. But the truth is, as we've explored the play, it's really great.
It is.
I mean, it's just a great play.
It's one of my faves. Yeah. And not just because it has fairies in it, because I do like
so lots of crazy things, and love is crazy in the woods, and, you know, people get not blinded. What do you call it? Not hypnotized.
Starry-eyed.
What do you get?
Starry-eyed.
Intoxicated.
Yeah.
Drunk in love.
Yeah, love drunk.
Well, it's wonderful because it's also, I mean, as most, if not all, Shakespeare plays, has several storylines going on.
Uh-huh.
And they're kind of complete on
right,
their own.
Right, little track.
So you've got like three different stories or more happening in Midsummer Night's Dream. And tell us about your story, you guys.
Yes. Max and I are the lovers. The play begins with Hermia's father, Aegis, bringing her to the Duke and saying, make my daughter marry the man I want her to marry, Demetrius.
Max and in our version, her father is her mother.
Yes.
Okay, good.
There's a lot there.
Good, good.
Malacca Falk is Aegis.
Oh, wonderful.
And so Hermia and Lysander, Dane Parker, an amazing Lysander, decide to run into the woods together rather than face the sharp Athenian law, which dictates that Hermia has to die if she doesn't follow her father's
wishes.
Or become a nun.
Well, is there a difference, really?
I don't know. I, Eliza, would choose the nunnery, but I think Hermia would choose death.
See, well, it would have to be death because if you said get thee to a nunnery, it would be a different show.
Yeah, that's good, Lisa. You're on it.
Thank you. I'm there.
And Demetrius is not the most admirable character. Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with Demetrius, Max?
Demetrius...
He's a liar.
He's a
playboy.
Bit of a,
he's a liar.
Well, I like Playboy. but I find Demetrius to be a really interesting character, primarily because his character arc ends in such a way that he ends the play still intoxicated under the love potion.
For the rest of his life.
Forever and ever and ever. But I see something kind of beautiful in that. And I think it's kind of special. And I think Shakespeare did it for a reason. And it's an but it is an interesting start with me pursuing Hermia, who
I am not interested.
She's very, very not interested.
Not interested.
Wants what he can't
have.
We
talk to the hand, she says. So y'all have a little scene, do you not?
We do indeed.
Anne, can you set this scene up for us?
Sure. We're in the woods. Demetrius is going to meet Hermia, and Hermia will have nothing of it.
Wonderful. This is Eliza Renner and Max Green doing a scene from Austin Shakespeare's production of A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh, why rebuke you, him that loves you so, lay breath so bitter on your bitter foe?
If you have slain Lysander, being or shoes in blood, plunge in the deep and kill me too. It cannot be but you have murdered him. So should a murderer look so dead, so grim?
So should the murdered look, and so should I, pierced through the heart with your stern cruelty. But, oh, you, the murderer, look as bright, as clear as yonder Venus in her glimmering sphere.
What's this to my Lysander? Where is he? Oh, good Demetrius, Will you give him me?
I'd rather give his carcass to my hounds.
Out, dog! Out, cur! You drive me past the bounds of maiden's patience. Have you slain him, then?
I am not guilty of Lysander's blood, nor is he dead, for all that I can tell.
I pray you tell me, then, that he is well.
And if I could, what should I get therefor? Ow!
A privilege! Never to see me more. And from thy hated presence part I so. See me no more, whether he be dead or no.
There is no following her in this fierce vein. Oh, here, therefore, for a while, I will remain.
Oh, well, you know what happens when you yawn. That sounds like so much fun. I did get a little scared when there was a hit. We try to have a nonviolent show here at Offstage and On the Air.
It is the 666th episode.
It is. Everything
Toby Miner is our fight choreographer.
Okay, of course. And fight choreography is always fun. Toby Miner, very well-known fight choreographer here in Austin, Texas. Who are some of the other key players in this show?
Well, you know, the great thing is that more than half, really, are new to us. And a lot of people are new to Austin. So we mentioned Dane Parker before, is quite wonderful as Lysander. But Helen Rayne Messenger, who's lots of people's favorite, is Helena. And it's a role she's always wanted to do. And she's done Titania like four times or something.
Wow.
And Kate Glasheen, our guest artist, our equity actor, is doing Titania. And she is just lovely.
Am I in it? No.
You're always in person.
You didn't make her. She should have been a mechanical.
I could be a bottom.
You could have been a mechanical.
Yeah, we can't even talk about that. Well, so that's amazing. And so are you excited to be back out in the park after this hiatus?
And the cast is just so in love with each other. I mean, they're so thrilled to be there. And we can't wait to we haven't seen an audience yet. That will be starting next Thursday. Mm-hmm. So we're really excited about that. And the city is helping us do American Sign Language performances. So we'll have three of those. I brought the dates for you. May 12th. May 14th and May 26th.
Wonderful.
Oh, that's awesome.
Brian Cheslick is helping us get the word out to the deaf community, and we're
Brian
excited.
Brian Cheslick of Deaf Austin Theater.
Yeah.
Who's currently doing a production of
Tribes.
Tribes in New Orleans, or as I like to call it, New Orleans.
Oh, I thought you were going to say NOLA.
No, I call it New Orleans.
Anyway, we're very
that's exciting.
Excited, yeah.
And I've always thought that this time of year is the perfect time to do things versus other shows that happen in that theater later in the summer when it's just oppressively hot.
And it's so special to see Shakespeare in the city, outside, with your community, bring your picnic basket. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, like, I don't know.
When the city has put together, you know, these handicap access areas that are commodious, you know, they're big and... So a lot of people can come out and they don't have to feel like, oh, I don't know how to sit on the grass. It's like, you can sit in a chair.
You can sit in a chair. You can come in
and sit on the grass.
You can come in and be commodious.
Hashtag options.
And the actors have some indoor commodiouses these days.
And the park has now proper toilets.
Oh,
no
good.
More porta-potties.
You don't have to go to a porta potty
That's
anymore.
Beautiful.
I think
in
this
our
is the
theater.
Big time.
That is the big time. So when do you open?
So we open next Thursday. We run every weekend in May, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, awesome. Well, thank you guys
so
for being
exciting.
On the show.
Come to AustinShakespeare.org and check out the details if it ever looks rainy.
Oh, I did. Give that email address again. I went down.
AustinShakespeare.org. If it ever looks rainy, we start posting about 4 o'clock to say, it's looking pretty good or, you know. Okay. So thank you, Lisa,
and check
for
the social medias.
Yes,
well, wonderful. Thank you guys
you.
For being on the show. That was Ann Ciccolella, Eliza Renner, and Max Green of Austin Shakespeare's production of *Midsummer Night's Dream* that runs. Give me the dates because I didn't write them down.
All May.
May
starting
runs
next,
in May.
Starting next Friday, May 6th. Next Thursday, May 5th.
Thursday the 5th. Oh my God, we're all a mess, aren't we?
Memorial Day weekend. Yeah, through that. Sunday,
there you go.
29th.
So you know I. The thing about Midsummer Night's Dream is it's all about a dream. We'll be back.
And to me, she looks like some.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and...
Nicole!
And no more co-host Ann Ciccolella
left.
No,
she's leaving. The other part of Jersey
she's waving.
The house.
She's waving to our listening audience, but we still have Eliza and Max here with us while we talk about some of our
because
local stuff.
Because we're cool like that.
We are.
They're trying to make us feel young because they felt bad for us feeling so
old.
Yeah,
there you go. There are actually some very interesting local stuff happening. One of the ones that I saw in American Theater Magazine, and I think we knew about this. Actually, I didn't know. I knew that Robert Ramirez was leaving UT, but I did not know where he was going. And he's going to head up the Carnegie Mellon School of Drama.
I mean, wow. You think he could have picked somewhere good to go, huh?
Yeah, and here's the thing. He's replacing four people.
Yeah, I know. You think he might be talented enough to, you know.
He will be missed.
It's a bummer, isn't
he's it? He's been on this show before, and he actually came up in the ranks at UT and just took over as head of the whole department right before the pandemic.
I was like, right before the pandemic. Yeah, we did have him on a good amount during the pandemic. We were lucky. Lucky Pierce.
We did. All of the above. What I don't want to talk about that right now. I'm waiting for I want to talk about Andre Ariel's dance, and I thought I put it in here and I may not have, but Andrea Ariel has got a production going. I'm gonna try to find it because I don't know what I did with it, but I do know that there's an email, so I'm just gonna tap dance here for a moment. So what do y'all think Today in Theater History is going to be about?
Oh, I think it'll be about morality plays.
Same.
Story of my life. I cannot find it. Look up Andrea Ariel Dance Company.
It's arieldance.org.
Thank you. Are you looking at it right now?
Yeah.
It's a show that's happening, right? That's like this weekend.
Oh, it's and celebrating their 30th anniversary, and they're doing, hold on, it's coming up. All of a sudden, it got really slow.
Yeah, you tell the folks about this, because I'm a failure, because I did not put it on my list of things to talk about.
I don't know why it started going out on me. So she's reunited with Graham Reynolds. I remember that, and love that's him. A whole big that's happening this weekend. And I cannot get the website to pull it up, but more information can be found on arieldance.org.
Yep,
A-R-I-E-L.
We love Andrea. She's been on the show like a zillion times. I've counted. The other thing that I think is interesting over at the Little Alley Theater.
Is this the Duncan Sheik in June?
This is the Duncan Sheik.
We're going on a road trip to
we
go?
We're going to go on a road trip. I guarantee
you. Tell me
it.
When to get the press seats and I will get them.
This is a show called Noir, and it stars Christy Altamare, Adam Cantor.
Christy Altamare.
Altamare. I call her Altamare. That was the original pronunciation, and they changed it, but I knew their family back in the day. That's all a lie.
love Adam Cantor.
She was Anastasia on Broadway. Yeah. Terrence McNally loved her, was in love with her. She performed here at Zach for Terrence's birthday.
Okay.
And recorded Morgan a little message that
there you
Christy.
Go. And also Morgan Marcel, who is in it. It is at the Alley Theater June 2nd through July 3rd. It is written by Duncan Sheik and Kyle Jarrow.
Mm-hmm.
And it just looks pretty amazing. It's getting some national attention, obviously, with all of those people. Adam Cantor was in The Band's Visit and Fiddler on the Roof.
I love his Isn't song that? In The Band's Visit.
Yeah.
He has the finale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see The Band's Visit?
My ears are thirsty. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Did you see it on Broadway?
I did, yeah.
So did you see the original movie?
I did, yes.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah.
You go, who would look at that movie and go, let's make a musical?
And but you know what? It worked for me. It was slow and...
Very slow.
Yeah,
very,
I was like...
slow and moody.
Yeah.
Interminably slow. And that was one of the things... I think that was one of the things that was coming here before pandemic, wasn't it?
Band's Visit
Maybe not.
Did come.
It did?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Oh,
well, we had it in Houston.
I don't think it was
Austin?
Here.
I don't know.
I don't think it was here. Anyway, it's being directed by Darko Trezniak. It's pretty.
It's a cool name.
It's a cool name. It's the only reason why I mentioned him, because I wanted to say the name.
Yeah, we're going to take a field trip to the theater
Yeah, and
so that's alleytheater.org if you're looking for more.
Thank you, alleytheater.org. A big thing. So we have just a couple more minutes. I'm going to choose one of the our topics from before that I didn't get to talk about. I want to talk about the Great Comet, not paying its royalties.
Ooh.
Did you hear about this?
I've heard some of this kerfuffle, but then I thought stuff got sorted, but then I was very unsure and I couldn't do my due diligence to get into it all. So fill me in.
Well, Dave Malloy, who is the composer, says he has not received his royalties for all their road shows and foreign things. Now, that in itself would not have raised to me wanting to talk about it on a day like today. But if you remember, Ars Nova sued them because they really were not very nice to Ars Nova. And then there was one other issue that took place. Do you remember what it was?
You're nodding. Casting controversy?
Yes, the casting controversy after Grobes left.
Yes.
So this producer...
Post-Grobes.
Post-Grubs, PG. Crazy. I don't know. I
love the music of the show, though.
So do I.
It was an amazing... I got to see it in New York.
And I did, too.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. And when you walked into the theater, you didn't know it was a theater anymore. And it was at the Imperial, which, as everybody that listens to this show, and y'all do, know, it was the very first Broadway house I've ever been to.
Oh, wow.
In 1969, when I went to see Fiddler on the Roof.
Aww.
Yep.
Which is currently playing in Houston right now.
Yep. The other article that is, which is currently playing in Houston, for more information, I'm going to guess houston.broadway.com.
Yes, or thehobbycenter.org.
I saw somebody on the Facebook, so just took a little trip over there to see Fiddler. And it's the new Fiddler with the new opening and the new ending, which I kind of like the opening. I don't get the ending. It doesn't really bookend well. In this person's opinion.
In Lisa's opinion. There you go.
The last thing, it was an article in the New York Times about theater superstitions. And we did talk about that a little bit before, but, you know, I love theater superstitions.
Mm-hmm. I just like superstitions. And then when you make it about theater, because we love theater so much, it makes it even more exciting.
Well, they sort of like this. The article, which is written by Alexis Selesky, sort of laid out some of the superstitions. It's bad luck to whistle in a theater.
Oh, yes.
And we know why that is the case, do we not?
Sailors.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So the people that ran the tech of the day and the flymen were sailors, and they got their cues by whistling. So if you walked into the theater whistling, a sandbag could land on your head.
Yes.
Because there would be a guy up there thinking he was taking a cue.
How'd that work for the cast of Anyone Can Whistle?
I don't know that they whistle all that much anymore.
I know. I was trying to be funny like you, but it doesn't work, Lisa.
Here's something I don't understand. This one I don't get. So here's some of the other ones. So we don't wear green.
What?
Huh.
Don't wear,
you
never
know
heard
why?
That one.
Because it's not easy being green.
it's the Kermit superstition. Don't give flowers.
You see, that one I don't get either.
I don't get that either.
Even as an audience member?
It just says don't get flowers.
Huh.
Always leave a light on, and that's about the ghost light, right. Which has its roots in something very necessary. You don't want people to fall into the pit.
Mm. I mean, I can understand don't feed the plant.
You're on fire today. all right, well, we got to do, oh my God, I got to do it really quick.
Today
in theater history.
Theater history.
Super
duper
quick, because I talked too much. Birthdays, Carol Burnett.
Oh, yes.
Eugene Fleming.
Oh, okay.
Paloma Garcia Lee, who I don't know, but I love saying that name.
It's a great name.
Bambi Lynn.
That's another good name.
Anita Luce, Russell Knipe. Openings, 2004, revival of Raisin in the Sun. Leap of Faith.
Whoa, that was 2000. That's the one with Sean P. Diddy Combs.
Leap of Faith opened in 2012. I didn't say it, but that very first number we played was from Leap of Faith. Mm-hmm. Fences in 2010, August Ooh. Wilson. The Life in 1997. Bandstand in 2017. Hallelujah Baby in 1967. And Company in 1970. Jelly's Last Jam in 1992.
Ooh, that's a good one. The Gregory Hines. Oh, you got me excited about
that. Yep, Gregory Hines, Tanya Perkins, what's his name? Savion Glover.
Yes. Oh.
And Strange Loop. So we're going to go.
It's moments like that. I appreciate my old age to experience that stuff.
Well, we're going to hear a little bit of Jelly's Last Jam with Play the Music for Me. This is Tanya Perkins. We'll be right back.
Music in the strutting of a final.
Nicole, you know there's an International Day of Everything.
I know. I love it. What day are we going international?
Well,
on
but
now?
You know, there was a day that should have been an international day that wasn't until just recently.
And really?
And that is World Burlesque Day.
Dun, 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 dun.
Which is coming up. And our very own Gigawatts.
I wish you could see my feathers going.
Well, they can. We're going to actually show the video. So our friends at the Gigawatts are here, a longtime guests of the show. Ruby Jewel, welcome back.
Hello. Thank you so much. Longtime fan and listener.
Yay. We like that.
And Jolie Goodnight. Hi.
Hi. It's so good to see you again.
Awesome. It is so great to see y'all are what I like to call, and this is a technical term that we use in radio, a sight for sore eyes.
Break that down.
So first of all, tell us about World Burlesque Day. What is that? How did it get started, et cetera?
Well, World Burlesque Day is an annual calendar day created to celebrate the art form of burlesque. It was first launched on April 26, 2020 to commemorate, that's the 50-year anniversary of the passing of one of the icons of burlesque, Gypsy Rose Lee.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So it was started by a UK-based burlesque artist and mental health ambassador to help connect the global burlesque community during the height of the lockdowns during the pandemic. And when no one could perform live and we were all kind of feeling isolated. So she launched World Burlesque Day as kind of a salve and a way to bring everyone together. So it's just continued to grow in popularity since then. And I think there's 57 countries now participating.
Wow. I was wondering how many countries are participating, but 57, that's spectacular.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I have to go off on a little side channel though. I'm just interested about, you know, this person, Gypsy Rose Lee. Sounds like a fascinating story. They should make a musical.
That's a great idea. I would go see that.
Entertain you.
I've got to get a gimmick in my head for the past 2 weeks, which is so funny that like you brought that up. I'm like, oh, that's been in my head for like 2 weeks.
So 57 countries. I have to ask whether is Ukraine one of the countries and are they participating this year?
Oh, gosh, that is such a good question. I'm going to look into that right after we get off this call.
Okay.
Neither confirm nor deny.
Yeah, I would assume that they wouldn't be participating this year, which I mean, well, I guess it would depend on what city. So,
depend on where.
So I love that y'all are doing this. I'm you know, unfortunately, it happened in the pandemic, but so many people have come together due to the pandemic and good things are happening. Is this your first year, the Gigawatts' first year to participate?
This is the first year that we will be participating with a live show. However, we participated I participated as an individual, as Ruby Jewel, the past couple of years tuning in. There's an online program that goes along with it that includes interviews, panels, book readings, little workshops, and that's all conducted over Instagram Live via the World Burlesque Day account. And so we've been participating and connecting that way.
Okay. And so this year you're doing a live performance at the Spider House Ballroom.
Yes.
So tell us about this performance.
Yeah, the show, we really wanted to celebrate the idea of connection, particularly because that's what's so meaningful for us as Gigawatts. You know, we've been in this community for, I guess we're going on 15 years or something now as a troupe.
15.
And 16, get it right. What's a number? But yeah, you know, we've been here, and that connection with our audience is so important to us, but also to our history, to burlesque history, to, you know, exploring diversity and inclusivity and body positivity. So yeah, we're having this show to celebrate World Burlesque Day, and especially celebrate what that means for Jigglewatts particularly. And also that includes our legends. You know, we have access to burlesque legends, living legends is what we call them, that we're doing burlesque in the 40s through the 70s. And so some people will be doing burlesque legend tribute numbers, which is really special to see, but also, you know, Hoochie Coochie dancers and the showgirl and the can-can. So we're really exploring the past, present, and future of burlesque in this show.
I'm just curious, do we have any burlesque icons that live in the Central Texas area?
Not that we know of, I don't think.
I was hoping that would be a different answer.
I know, we hope for a different answer all the time. There were some in Dallas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there have been some in Dallas. Like, I got to spend a little bit of time with Tammy True, and I believe Ruby Jewel did as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she danced with Candy Barr at Jack Ruby's Club. But
we're always on the lookout. We're always on the lookout.
All right, I have to ask an ignorant question.
I hope someone hears this and we discover something new we didn't know.
Yes, that's something that's amazing that the burlesque community has done, because, you know, a lot of these folks really kind of went into hiding a little bit. They were either made to feel ashamed for having done burlesque, which is just crazy to me, but they were. Or, you know, they just got married and forgot about it and just like left it in their past. And so burlesque has really done a lot of work to unearth these people, these incredible creative artists, and learn from them and get their stories down. So yeah, hopefully somebody can hear this and be like, oh my God, I did that back in the day.
I hope so. And you know, burlesque is over the past, I'd say maybe 16 years or so, has had a resurgence in popularity. It's featured in the new Mrs. Maisel season. Yeah. She works in a burlesque, she's a comic and a burlesque act. So tell us about this performance. What are some of the acts that we might see?
So we have some really great guests joining us. It's a lot of Jigglewatts in this show, but also we have Lily Fay, who is fantastic as a classic burlesque performer. We have Devin Allfather, who has this incredible belly dance fusion and also like a little bit of danger mixed in there.
A little danger mixed in.
So incredibly talented. We have the Silver Fox, who will be doing some juggling, I believe. So at least we'll have some of that vaudeville mixed in there as well, which is so integral in the burlesque story. Mm-hmm. And we have Selma Boddy, who is our mistress of ceremonies, our fabulous, incredible drag performer. So, you know, we also have somebody that's doing a can-can number. And I'll be doing the Art of the Singing striptease, which has been hard to preserve, but I'm working really hard to preserve it and share it and make sure that it stays in the future. So yeah. And then I believe we'll have some legend tributes, like I was saying before, and we'll see what else, but those are the ones off the top of my head.
I think that is great. I would, can I assume that we'll be looking forward to this being an annual project for the Jigglewatts?
Yeah, I hope so. I don't see any reason not to. I love it.
I like that answer.
Love celebrating this.
Yeah.
So anything we can do to bring awareness, you know, burlesque, even though we've been here for a long time, especially in Austin, is still like, I find myself explaining what it is.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the mission statements on World Burlesque Day's website, she says, we want to invite the public to experience burlesque and demystify the art form. And so I would love to continue it every year because more people can find out about it, have their lives changed, because it's transformative. The first burlesque show you ever see, you'll always remember it. So I hope we do it every year.
That's cool.
Awesome. So what if you were to like pare down to, you know, your elevator speech, what do you want Austin and Central Texas audiences to know about burlesque and the Gigawatts?
I would want them to know to not be afraid of it, and that they will definitely be surprised and hopefully delighted, and just give it a chance. Jolie, what would you say?
I want audiences to have that opportunity to feel included. You know, burlesque mm-hmm. gives everybody somewhere to hang out. And that's what got me started in the first place was I wasn't that like preteen looking for my chair in the lunchroom anymore. When I found burlesque, I was like, oh, this is so the table I'm sitting at. And so that's why I feel like audiences should come, because I think they'll find a table where they belong and they get to hang out for the rest of their lives.
Well, that is yeah. wonderful. So y'all are at the Spider House Ballroom. Do you know what, are there any kind of COVID restrictions in place for your show?
Yeah. We are asking that people either bring their proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test at the door.
Okay. And what about masks? Anything?
Masks are encouraged. Absolutely. Okay. Whatever makes you comfortable and keeps you healthy and safe, we love that. So please wear your mask. Everyone will be happy that you're in it if you choose to do so.
You know what makes me comfortable? A big old lobster roll and a glass of brandy.
BYO.
Bring your own lobster roll.
Bring your own glass, though.
So tell us when your performance is and where folks can go to get more information.
So the show is Thursday, April 28th at the Ballroom, formerly known as Spider House, which is at 2906 Fruit Street here in Austin, Texas. The show is at 8. Doors are at 7. And I think I covered it all.
You covered it. Well, that is great. Well, thank you so much for being on the show again. We can't wait to have you back. Yes.
Where to get tickets? You can get tickets.
Yes, we did do that. We did do that.
TheGigawattsBurlesque.com.
Spell that for folks.
T-H-E, that's the. Sorry, I can't help it. Gigawatts, Gigawatts. Burlesque, BURLESQUE.com.
Excellent. And we're going to send this interview away with a little bit. We have the world burlesque national anthem or anthem. I don't know if it's called a national anthem. It's their anthem. Ooh. So we'll be listening to this as we walk away. So thank you guys so much for being on the show, and I look forward to seeing it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know you're the best, honey. Don't take anything less. Shave those lips, tighten that dress.
You know you're the best, honey.
Yeah, that just made me really excited.
We love the Gigawatts. We only have a few seconds to say goodbye, so I'm going to say goodbye. This was a fun show.
Wow, it was a wonderful show today. It was so exciting having a whole bunch of people in here chit-chatting, being with you.
Remember, all that jazz. Go to offstageonair.com to get all the information that we weren't able to talk about on the air. Mark Ford has wrestled the microphone away from me, so I'm going to stop talking immediately.
You know why? We'll got some Texas music mixtape to play.
That's right, and we'll see you next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. Bye.
Be wasting our time till we take a look.